Welcome to On the Couch, a podcast from Reaction with me, Lucy Beresford, broadcaster and psychotherapist, taking a deep dive into the relationships making the headlines in politics today and exploring the psychology and personalities in political life. The online safety bill is currently working its way through Parliament and it seeks to legislate for social media companies, for example, to take responsibility for harmful and illegal content online and make it safer for users, particularly children. One of the areas that's caused great concern is the issue of pornography, which can be accessed by kids. Recent evidence shows that more than a quarter of children have encountered it online, and at least one in 10 have encountered it before the age of 10. So I'm delighted to say that I'm joined today by someone who's worked very hard to introduce safety measures around this, and that is Lord Bethel of Romford. Hello, James.
Hello, Lucy.
Let's start with that online safety bill. You are responsible for representing all health matters and legislation in the upper house, and you and some of your colleagues, you've managed to get, you know, some tougher rules in that bill, like prison sentences for people who run social media companies if they repeatedly fail to prevent kids accessing this material online. How do you feel about the online bill as it stands now, and what do you think still needs to be done?
Well, it's a huge step of progress. It really is. I have all sorts of niggles around things I'd love to have seen in it. But the bottom line is that we've taken a great stride forward, and other countries are really looking at what we've done. We're for the moment way ahead of other countries in terms of bringing in a new framework. And the most important thing for me is that what it really does is it makes people who have online services, whether those are search engines or social media companies or just blog posts, it makes them responsible for what is on their platform. And for so long, Lucy, we've had this garbage from big tech that they were just not legally or morally responsible for the awful things that are going on the internet. And I hope that this piece of legislation really will draw a line underneath that, and we will see corporates and criminals both held responsible for the irresponsible things they do. And I think that's a big step forward.
My work involves looking at the psychological impact of what happens to people. And what is obviously very clear from the pornography that kids do have access to at the moment is that it is normalizing a lot of sexual violence, for example. And there was other research that came out quite recently that showed that, you know, nearly 40% of people who are aged between 16 and 21, so not even really children any longer, but young adults, they just assume that girls enjoy violent and aggressive acts like strangling, like slapping, like spanking. What impact have you seen this having psychologically on young people? Because it's obviously an area that has really captured your imagination and your attention, that you want to do something really stringent about it. What did you discover?
Well, I think I have a real personal dilemma about this, because I find the pornography industry as an industry really distasteful. I hate talking about it. It makes me depressed at the end of the day. If I spend a day talking about pornography, I literally go to bed feeling dirty and feeling really uncomfortable. And I'm a middle-aged man. I'm literally the last person in the world to be really banging on about the dangers of pornography. But I also feel very strongly that it is a hidden underground activity. There's more hours of Pornhub watched every year at the moment than of the BBC. And we don't like as a society to talk about it. And the impact on children is the most acute element of this. And there are three bits of it that make me feel really uncomfortable. Firstly, there are a lot of children actually in the porn industry. And how do they get into the porn industry? Yeah. Well, some of them are literally abducted and raped and have their videos put up on Pornhub. And there are many instances of that. And And there are court cases going through the Californian courts at the moment around that. There are kids who have uploaded accidentally or had videos stolen of them having sex, and those go up on the tubes and on Pornhub. And that's a horrific experience for those involved. So there are kids literally involved in the most indescribable ways in child porn, in casual porn. Then secondly, as you say, the type of pornography that is on the internet is not the slap and tickle stuff that I remember from my teenage years. It is brutal, horrific, violent porn, often featuring gross misogyny, racism, incest, and the values and the story it tells is incredibly distasteful. And all right, I think it prints itself on children's brains and gives them a completely wrong idea about what is involved in the sexual act, in what the discourse is between partners, boys, girls, or whatever. And it really it twists the brain. It leaves children with completely the wrong idea. And you can see that from the Home Office codes on children who go on to commit sexual crimes involving children later in their life. So often they talk about their addiction to porn. Wayne Cousins, the murderer of Sarah Everard, a massive violent porn addict. There's a lot of this going on that we don't know about. And then thirdly, there is an othering that pornography has. If you become addicted to porn and you go down the rabbit hole of watching too much porn, the accounts clearly describe the way in which that cuts you off from communication with other people more generally. It's one of the corrosive parts of the internet that means that normal communion, normal conversation with other people becomes a big distraction, because there's, like with a lot of the online addictions that people have with gambling and with social media, a bit of the brain is always thinking about the thing it's addicted to. And I think that has had a really corrosive effect on our kids, particularly because of lockdowns when they spend too much time on there. And also because so many young kids, the vast majority of kids, even at 10 years old now in the UK, have got a mobile phone. So it's gone from being on the family PC to being in the pockets, watched in the schoolyards and playgrounds of the country.
So, well, that's the big generational shift, isn't it? Because in our day, it was simply magazines on the top shelf, invariably in the petrol station at the end of the village. I mean, if you really wanted to get sight of something like this, you had to make a lot of effort, whereas now it actually lands in the palm of your hand. And you mentioned the phones that the kids have, and you're a big supporter of age verification checks. But my worry, I mean, it's great that's being put out there, but realistically, that's not going to completely eliminate the problem, because children, for example, as you say, they could get it on their mobile phone, or they could get it on the phone of an older friend or an older sibling to have access. And in fact, they could even get around the age verification checks that way. Children are designed to be curious about the world, and that includes about sex. So what can we do?
But that's the kind of... listen, that's a really fair question, but I've become less tolerant of it the more I've looked into it. Listen, the IT companies would have us believe there's nothing you can ever do about anything, that the internet is global, politicians are wasting their time trying to regulate it. I just don't accept that nihilism and that defeatism. The truth at the moment is that a lot of porn is pushed at children. It's not that they are going on some voyage of discovery and seeking out Pornhub and then losing themselves on the tubes. No, a lot of it gets pushed at them by other children and by adverts on services like Twitter. If you're on Twitter and your profile is of a 14-year-old child and you like Kim Kardashian and Ronaldo and hip hop, you have a very, very different experience than if you're a middle-aged backbench peer like me and you're following Dan Hodges and, Keir Starmer, right? You will see a world where very, very quickly, with a small amount of, you will be seeing AI porn and increasingly violent and aggressive porn on the Twitter channel. And then that.
What's that about? That's the algorithm, is it? That actually, and as you say, that's where the tech companies actually do bear complete responsibility for that.
And they make money. Let's be under no illusion about this. 13% of the traffic on Twitter is porn. And they are making money out of children clicking on porn and on porn adverts and on porn videos. If we get rid of that, that's going to be quite a big part of the problem gone. I just don't think that the problem is that children are out there seeking hardcore porn and we can't stop them because they have an insatiable appetite for this stuff. It's not. They are having porn pushed at them. And inevitably, when they grow curious, they then go into the algorithmic spiral and become increasingly addicted to the serotonin hit of watching grisly sexual content.
Stop
the pushing, and I think you will have solved a hell of a lot of the problem. Not all
so you stop the pushing, but is there a responsibility to, let's say, education? Within the education system and the sex and relationships curriculum that is evolving, is there merit in having part of that curriculum addressing pornography up front?
No, I do not want my young children being taught about pornography, full stop. By the way, it's classic victim blaming. My 10-year-old, who I just dropped off at school, I don't want him being told about porn in his class. And I don't want the implication being that he has done something wrong because someone has served him an advert.
I want
to have an experience where he never comes across porn. And it's reasonable for me as a parent to give him a laptop or a phone and to be able to have the ability to stop him from seeing illegal content. Right? It is illegal for him to watch porn. Yeah.
So I'm going to slightly spin that around and say that if you want to prepare children for the world ahead, you have to equip them with the tools to know what's out there. And a really basic early example is learning to cross the road, which is that you don't go into great detail about car crashes and disabilities and trauma, but you do educate them about how to safely look left, look right, look left again. Maybe it was the other way around. And it's all age appropriate. And you gradually instill in them the confidence that they can cross the road on their own. And that obviously has greater benefits than just their safety. And at the other end of the scale, you've got a world that I operate in, which includes encouraging consenting adults, usually in maybe long-term relationships, who can watch porn together and enjoy it and sometimes even make it hilariously, because sex is meant to be fun, and that there is a place for porn in certain settings. And is it not really important that we have conversations with teenagers? What some might say that 12 or 13 is too late for this, but give them the experience of what is healthy and what is out there so that they know that if they start to get really weird stuff, that's the thing that they can reject and see as unnormal, abnormal.
Well, I agree with a lot of what you said, and for adults to watch porn together and make hilarious videos, that, you know, good luck to them, and that's absolutely fine and to be celebrated. And I like my children to take risks. They're all good rock climbers and, they're not very good at crossing the road, but I do try my hardest. But what I do not accept is the idea that at a young age, you know, below 16, any child should ever see any porn, because in some way that prepares them for later in life. Now, in the old days, my dad used to give me white wine at lunch, watered down, because he thought that age 10 or 12, that would prepare me for a life of drinking. The truth is, what it did was it normalized the alcohol and it changed my body, literally physically changed my body to have an appetite for alcohol later in life. And there's very good academic proof that people who drink when they're a young child, they want to drink a lot more when they're adult. And actually, if you don't drink until you're much later, you may not drink so much as an adult. And we've seen a huge generational change because kids aren't drinking so much. I think that there is a cutoff around, for sure, around 16, where there is no need and no benefit and only downside from children seeing porn generally, and in particular, the kind of horrific, violent, nasty, misogynistic porn that you find on the internet today. And I think that the end result of that thinking is that we need basically two internets. We need an internet where people are free to do what they like, if they want to gamble, if they want to take risks, if they want to watch porn or indulge in extremism, that's fine. But we need an internet which is safe for children, where they do not come across extremists and predators and hardcore porn and gambling apps, and their parents can do their job as parents and make the decision about how their sexual education will happen, and their relationships. And if they want to have relationships before they're 16, of course some kids do, then they can do that protected from the nasty, misleading precedents that the online porn industry are pushing at them.
Can I pull back a bit, because you were talking really about some of your observations about young people, or maybe people in the 20s. Some people listening to this podcast may know that you used to run the Ministry of Sound, which I'm sure was full of a particular demographic, people having a wonderful time. Do you think that kind of setting could be set up fresh today now, or has the world moved on in terms of how people enjoy themselves? I'm just very conscious that the people in their 20s now are just very different to what they were a generation ago, not least in terms of their mental health. Do you think they actually fundamentally want to enjoy themselves in the same way, or has that changed?
Lucy, it's a really good question. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm in my mid-50s. I find it difficult to judge. I loved the 1990s, and I loved clubbing, and I loved the system. It was very benign. You know, it was Wetherspoons on a Friday was always more violent and more dangerous than the Ministry of Sound. We never had any trouble. People were really, it was a nice community, and people were on the whole very well behaved and celebrated terrific music and a sense of community. It was started at midnight and people stayed up till 7 in the morning. Often you had to travel miles. There was uncertainty in it. And you're right, people do feel, you know, people in their 20s seem to me to be incredibly risk averse and staying at home. And they see the downside in social contact, in being in unusual places and feeling uncomfortable. I don't really understand that. That you can definitely see in the workplace as well. The figures on mental health for people in their 20s are terrible. And a number of them who are absenting themselves from the workplace are absolutely extraordinary.
There seems a lot of fear. I mean, you say they, you know, they felt, they feel a little bit too risk averse. I mean, you did mention your own kids doing their rock climbing, which you would never get me doing. But just so you know, in case you were thinking of inviting me, but there does seem to be a timidity about being in the workplace, about dating, about drinking. Is it about fear? Are we creating a climate, and not just in the UK? Because you mentioned right at the beginning of this that you've had, you know, other countries maybe wanting to talk to our government about what you're doing for online safety. Lots of countries are recognizing that their young people are scared. What's going on?
Yeah, I don't fully understand it. I have a suspicion that some of the causes are very, very deep rooted. They are about the breakdown of some of our communities, that people don't feel connected with the people that they spend time with, about some of the really nasty things that can happen to you. You know, if you do something wrong these days and you are outed on the internet, you know, it's happened. You know, I work in the world of politics. I have seen innocent people absolutely drowned out by hate on the internet. That's huge jeopardy. Whereas when I was in my 20s, you know, I could get up with all sorts and no one would ever know about it. And it was secret. So no, I can't fully explain it. And it's really troubling. I mean, it's really holding our society and our economy back, I think. I really worry about it.
Well, I think we'll have to come back and have a conversation another time about some ways in which we could help people with this anomalous sense of fear. But for now, thank you for what you're doing with the Online Safety Bill. And thank you, Lord Bethel, for being my guest here on the couch.
Perfect. Thank you, Lucy.
Thank you for listening. Please remember to like, subscribe, review, all the things that help people hear about the On the Couch podcast. And do tell all your friends, and even people who aren't your friends, but maybe you want them to be. This is a podcast for Reaction.